I was 18 when I first met Thelma Holt. It was 1984. I had just finished A-levels and was on work experience at the Theatre of Comedy, en route, or so I thought, to drama school, where I had plans to become the next Helen Mirren. My parents had driven me to London in their old white Saab 96, delivering me and my two holdalls to a hostel in Bloomsbury. Apparently I couldn't wait to get rid of them, I was so excited. A new life beckoned and neither fear nor doubt had yet emerged in my psyche. They had moved from London to Dorset when I was 8, having bought a run-down old farmhouse into which they sank almost all their money. Although there was an indoor flushable loo, the bath was conspicuous by its absence. For 18 months we bathed in a tin trough in front of an old log burner, so inefficient that it devoured logs at an unbelievable rate. There was no television until I was 16. The Theatre of Comedy had been formed the year before by Ray Cooney, farceur and director. Thelma had been wooed by Ray to join the company as executive producer to expand the remit of the company, a wise appointment. For the previous 7 years, she had run the Roundhouse in Chalk Farm very successfully, with Robert Maxwell as treasurer. She later told me that in their first meeting, he'd entered the room saying, "I'm Robert Maxwell. There are three things you need to know about me. I don't drink, I don't gamble, and I don't sleep with women." To which Thelma had replied, "Mr. Maxwell, how splendid. At least we have two things in common." The Theatre of Comedy didn't really produce the kind of work Thelma would become known for, but her eye was focused on the opportunity to produce Joe Orton's Lute with Leonard Rossiter. Thelma loved Joe Orton, and this play in particular. Indeed, the production sold out during its initial run at the Ambassador's Theatre and transferred to the Lyric on Shaftesbury Avenue. A week later, Thelma was at the Ambassador's Theatre where another Theatre of Comedy production had recently opened. She was sitting on the floor in the bar having a drink with Malcolm, her deputy and amanuensis, when she received a call from the Lyric. She says she will never forget running down Shaftesbury Avenue with Malcolm trailing behind her. She shouted to him over her shoulder, "If that fucking company manager's wrong, I'm going to kill him." By the time she reached the theatre, Leonard was dead. He had died in his dressing room just as he was due to go on stage. On the first day at the Theatre of Comedy, Thelma wasn't there. I wasn't to know at the time, but she was in the United States giving evidence in Vanessa Redgrave's suit against the Boston Symphony Orchestra. They had cancelled her contract to narrate Stravinsky's Oedipus Rex because of her support for the Palestine Liberation Organization. Malcolm told me sometime later that Thelma had received a call from Vanessa saying, "Can you come? I need you." Thelma replied, "When do you want me?" "Now," said Vanessa. I had come to see the financial director in the hope that I would be given work in the theatre, backstage. He explained that this wouldn't be possible because of union regulations and instead offered me work in the office, with the marketing department. He asked if I was free to work that evening to help out in the theatre bar with an after-performance event in the Shaftesbury Theatre, where Ray Cooney's production of Two Into One was performing. I said yes. He looked me up and down. He might have thought my dress sense was a little odd. I was wearing plus fours and brogues, a shirt and cardigan. Smart, I thought, but I sensed he was appalled. I had a bob haircut and painted freckles on my face, across my nose and cheeks. I was very good at applying these, and nobody had ever questioned their authenticity. I was 5'10" and slender, physical characteristics that bothered me, and the confidence suggested by my eccentric attire was at odds with the reality. I was fair-haired, blue-eyed, with an English rose complexion. One of my mother's friends had once given me a large badge that said, "Luscious Peach." I didn't feel like a luscious peach, more like a gawky, awkward foal. "Had I a frock?" he asked. I didn't, but again I said yes. As soon as I left him, I headed straight to the nearest clothes shop on the corner of Oxford Street, where I bought a skirt, a new top and cardigan. I had to wear the brogues, though. The budget couldn't run to new shoes as well. I probably looked odder still. Returning to the office that evening, I met a very smiley, polished, enthusiastic and confident woman who ran the marketing department. She was incredibly nice and explained that all I would have to do was hand drinks around and smile. She even organised my seat to watch the performance from. I'd never seen a farce and remember feeling oddly detached from it, aware the actors were performing. However brilliantly they carried it off and however funny it was, I found it hard to become involved. The theatre I had fallen in love with started with a trip to see a production of Brecht's The Caucasian Chalk Circle. Despite the isolated location of home during my childhood, Mum and Dad would seek out any film or play and drive miles to make sure we saw it. So when the Royal Shakespeare Company announced a visit to Yeovil, tickets were booked weeks in advance.